Blog Talk Radio.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Welcome to Stovetop Politics. I am your host, Virginia Cruda, and we have a packed show tonight. As usual, you can find me on the Twitters at VA Cruda and Hammy hiding out somewhere being quiet, B2 Pilot on Twitter for him. And in a few minutes, we're going to have a guest call in. We're going to be talking to Demetrius Miner, who has a book coming out that he's going to talk about. And I'm going to surprise him with a few questions that are completely unrelated to the book. So that'll be fun. but we're also going to talk about the Religious Freedom Restoration Act that passed in Indiana recently and has everyone from, you know, Ashton Kutcher to Hillary Clinton complaining and some boycotts and some other stuff like that. So that's kind of a fun deal for the state of Indiana. So that's kind of what we're going to do tonight. We're going to, like I said, we're going to talk to Demetrius. We're going to talk about a few other things. I don't know if we're going to do a dumb tweet of the week from John Kerry, but we're definitely going to do the dumb statement of the week. I don't know. Hammy, did you hear what John Kerry said?
I don't know if it's the latest one, but everything I've seen is, it's pretty much, hey, we spend a couple of weeks over here in Paris trying to give as much to Iran as I possibly can.
Oh, pretty much. He's basically saying, well, we'll reach a deal if it please Allah.
right, sure.
Literally, that's what he said. What?
No, I think, sure, exactly.
Yeah, so that, and you know, I don't think he means what, or I'm not sure if he knows exactly what he means when he says that, but that's kind of the deal. So I was reading Drudge right before, which is always a bad idea because then I see these goofy headlines and I have to look. So there is a new abortion clinic in Maryland that is trying to put a positive face on the abortion procedure. They're really upset because apparently a lot of people feel that it might be wrong. Even people who believe that it should be legal don't think it's a good thing. Surprise, right? You know, killing a baby could be possibly viewed as negative, even if it is legal. So, yeah, that's kind of interesting. But they're talking about this kind of push to, you know, not really intending the pun in that way, this movement to make abortion palatable, I guess, is what they're talking about. And I just, like, why? I mean, I understand why they want to do it, because, you know, you can make more money off it if more people think it's okay to do. And so instead of, you know, the typical horror story clinic where people don't really say the A word out loud, A word being abortion, and they cover it with these, well, we're going to terminate this pregnancy because, et cetera, et cetera. Now there's this new clinic where they've got nice hardwood floors and comfy couches, and they greet women who come into the clinic with like spa-like bathrobes and hot tea and all that, and then they talk about abortion just like the open and out in there and all that stuff. So that's kind of fun. Anyway, that's, I was looking at this and it kind of makes me ill. And it doesn't kind of make me ill. It definitely makes me ill. So that's kind of a fun thing to read right before you go on air. But it looks like we've got Demetrius on the phone. So we're going to bring him on. Let's see. Hey, Hammy, do you know why people are having trouble getting on the show? Hammy?
Sorry, I
did
had
I
myself
put
muted.
Up the link?
Yeah, no,
is,
we
is the link funky?
I'm checking on it now. No, the link should
okay.
be fine. There, I'm not sure what they're seeing, but you got Demetrius
okay,
on live now.
Okay, because I posted the one you sent me, so that's what we're working on. But Demetrius, you there?
Yes, I'm right here.
Okay, we're having some technical difficulties, mainly with people not being able to hear. So we're working through that, but this is all going to be podcasted anyway, so we can go ahead and kind of get started. And what I want you to do is kind of introduce yourself a little bit. I'm somewhat familiar with your background, but not completely. I mean, you interned in the George W. Bush White House. Am I right about that?
That's correct. I did that in 2006.
Okay. Okay, so that was a while ago, and you've been kind of all over social media and whatnot since then. Kind of give everybody a picture of what you've been doing since then, and then you can just jump right in and start talking about the book.
Okay, you want me to do that now, or are you going to ask questions?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, no, go for it. I have a couple questions for you after you get done with that, but...
All right, well,
not supposed to be evil, no. But go ahead and introduce yourself and then tell us a little bit about your book.
Sure. As aforementioned, I did serve as a White House intern in the Bush administration in 2006. I also am a blogger, and a lot of my pieces have been featured in the Washington Times, Freedom Works, Town Hall. I'm also a member of Project 21, which is a national advisory council that consists of black conservatives all across the United States. I currently serve as a pastoral assistant at Calvary New Life Tabernacle in Atlanta, Georgia. And I was also a former radio show host and producer. And, of course, I'm the author of the upcoming book, Preservation and Purpose, that is slated to debut April the 28th.
Okay, and so what was it that I know I've had the bug for a long time. I write everything that I think almost, which is probably a bad
right.
thing. But you, what made you decide that you needed to what was it that was in your heart that you needed to get out in this book? What,
well, when
if
the
you
publishing
understand what
company,
I'm asking.
I do, yes. The publishing company that I wound up working with, when they told me that they believed that I had what it took to write a book, I was really hesitant. I'm like, well, you know, I don't think I have what it takes. I was reluctant because I'm like, who's going to read it? What do I have to say? There's 100 people out there writing a book. What's going to make me so unique? But then I saw myself as having some life-altering events that took place that helped define who I was. I am a millennial.
Okay.
And I said, you know, there's not really a lot of millennials out there advocating for their own generation. So I said, I'm going to share my testimony. I'm going to share my struggles. I'm going to share my pains and my hurts. And I'm going to share how those led me to my triumphs and to my the few successes that I've had in life. And then I'm also going to attempt to compel those in my generation to be leaders, to hold their public elected officials accountable, and to be involved with not just the political process, but the cultural process of shaping their communities
right.
and cities. And so I felt the burden, and I put the pen and the paper to use, so to speak.
See, now that for me, it's always been, I mean, I started writing, and I kind of jumped into radio because I like to talk a lot, and so it kind of made sense. Mm-hmm. And I have friends in radio, so I kind of, it seemed to be the natural progression. But for me, when I write something, it's because there's something in my head that's trying to beat its way out of me, and I have to write it down or it will continue to, you know, it'll continue to bounce around in my head until it drives me crazy. And so it's interesting to see different, kind of a different process, if that makes any sense. But so what, obviously the book is written by a millennial, and is it something that you think that will speak primarily to millennials or to just about anybody?
Well, I mean, from a total, you know, capitalistic marketing perspective, I want everyone to buy the book. But I do think that young adults and millennial tickler would definitely see similarities within themselves. And I think that they will be encouraged to get involved. And I think it would encourage me. And I think that, you know, they'll read the book, and at the end of the book, they will come to the conclusion that if God could use a hard-headed, stubborn boy from Dayton, Ohio, then surely I have a purpose. Surely I have potential. So that's the whole purpose of the book, for people to know that
right.
God preserved them for a purpose, for destiny, for this particular time in our country's hour. So that's the whole purpose of the book.
Okay, well, that's definitely an interesting take, and I'm looking forward to it myself. But so I'm trying to think one of the things that we've been talking about, not to completely jump to a different topic, but you have spent some time on the pastoral side of the church. Obviously, you've spent some time in the church in general, and I know you say kind of abreast of political issues as well. You're aware of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act that passed in Indiana.
Right.
Yeah? Okay.
Yes.
Now, it's something that we were going to talk about during the show anyway, and I just have a couple questions about that for you from more of the pastoral perspective, because I was raised in the Presbyterian church. I attend a Lutheran church now, and we've always been kind of on this. I was always taught kind of the mantra, love the sinner, hate the sin. So you can disagree with what somebody does. That doesn't mean that you hate that person or that you think less of that person, because the reality is they just sin in a different way than you do. It's not that, you know, what you're doing is worse than what I'm doing. What you're doing is different than what I'm doing, maybe. But
right.
It's still, we all sin. It doesn't matter who you are or, you know, what your faith is. Or we all do things wrong from time to time. It just may be that the sin that plagues my life is different from the one that plagues somebody else's life. And so for me to say that this person is lesser is not a correct assessment. It's just different. And so for me, I've always, you know, when people talk about, you know, it's wrong to discriminate, I agree with that. I think that if I am a business owner and I were to discriminate against somebody for, you know, skin color or sexual preference or what have you, that would be morally wrong for me to do. But I don't think it's the government's place to tell me that I can't do it. And,
I do wanna,
and because I've said that, people have said, wait a minute. But go ahead. Do you have a comment on just the whole thing? Or?
Well, sure. I do want to clarify one thing real quick when you talk about experience on the pastoral side. I'm a pastoral
right.
assistant. I'm not
right.
a pastor within itself. I just want
right.
to make that distinction because there are some people who are under the impression that I am a pastor. I'm a preacher, but a preacher is not necessarily someone who shepherds a church.
Right.
I just wanted to make that clear, that clarification
sure.
real quick. Christianity is all about a choice. The Bible has specific instructions on how we're supposed to live a life that's in resemblance of Christ. But with that said,
right.
Christ gives us free will. He gives us a choice to serve him. Now, with that said, I believe that if people want to defend their faith, and if they want to defend their values and their morals, and if they want to live by Christian principles and by a biblical mandate, they have the right to do that without being forced to contradict it or to live opposite of
right.
that. Now, if a business has a religious business has certain principles that they want to abide that, it's very simple. You have a choice to give money to that store, to give that store your business, or you can decide to do business elsewhere. So I really don't have a problem with the legislation that's been issued out in Indiana. I think if people
right.
think they're bigots, I think if people think that they're being unfair or that they're being hateful, whatever the case may be, I just simply think they should take their business elsewhere. It's how the free markets work.
Absolutely.
It's not only a conservative principle, but it's an American.
Absolutely. And that's kind of what I'm getting. I was kind of looking at it from the other side, though. If you're talking about, because we have the reason that we have this law in the first place is that if you look at the way the Constitution is written, you can't legislate the bigotry out of the people. You can't do it. I mean, you can try, but when you tell somebody, well, you're not allowed to be a racist. You're not allowed to be a bigot. Well, no, I'm just not allowed to act like one. You can't make me not be one. You know, that's kind of the issue that I'm coming. There's a quote from Plato that says basically the good man does not need a law to tell him to do the right thing, and a bad man will find a way around the law. I mean, it's the same argument we use for gun control. You know, the law-abiding gun owners don't need a law to tell them, you know, not to shoot people just for fun. And the people who want to shoot people just for fun are probably not going to obey any law you give them anyway. And so it's kind of the same thing. You're not really creating a bigotry-free society. You're simply just making bigotry hide behind, you know, something prettier. And what really got to me about this, and I'm going to ask you about this because I'm sure you've heard the comparison as well. One of the things that bothers me the most about this whole situation, the anti-bigotry regulations and stuff that are coming out and, you know, forcing Christian businesses to accommodate certain events that they don't agree with and things like that, a lot of people, at least in my feed, are making the comparison between the gay rights agenda now and the civil rights movement of the 60s. And to me, it's insulting to make a comparison like that. But I don't know. Have you been hearing the same thing? I mean,
yes, I've heard people try to make that comparison, and it is very offensive. People living by a moral code of conduct and biblical principles. There is no comparison to that to someone showing bigotry and showing racism because of the color of their skin. Being black has nothing to do with the homosexual movement. Being white has nothing
right.
to do with the homosexual movement. I'm of the opinion that homosexuality is a choice. I'm of the thought process that homosexuality is against the original design pattern made by our creator. So therefore, it's hard mm-hmm. to equate that to a civil rights movement where people were being mistreated, where people were being isolated, and people were being persecuted due to the color of their skin, which that is against a biblical principle. So, you know,
yeah.
we live in a day and
I mean,
age where there's a hyperbole of exaggerations, and people are, the media and particularly people on the left, are doing things to elicit an emotional response. But in all actuality, that has no merit to it at all.
Yeah, that was my assessment as well. Because, you know, when I say, hey, you know, and here's, this is my one thing, and I may offend people when I say this, but personally, I believe that individual businesses should be allowed to refuse service to anyone for any reason. And that includes them telling me, oh, well, you're a woman. We don't serve women here. Because I want to know where the crazy is. I want to know where the bigotry lives. Because that's when I take my money elsewhere. That's how I know not to patronize this business. That's how I know not to give, you know, give money to somebody who, you know, if there was a movie rental store down the street from my house, and they refused to serve blacks, guess what? I wouldn't be paying them either. If they refused to serve just about anybody, you know. But that's the problem. People see this, the RFRA, and they assume that that's what's happening, that people are saying, oh, you're gay, we don't serve your kind here. That's not even what's happening. We're not talking about a case of, you know, somebody came into the bakery and, wait a second, you're gay? Put down that cupcake and get out. No, we're talking
right.
about
right.
a situation where they said, you know what, we've been doing business with you for years. We love your cake. We want you to do a cake for our wedding. Yeah. Sorry, but it's not a situation, or the event butts heads with our religious principles, and therefore we can't be involved. However, come back and see us on your next birthday, and we'll be happy to accommodate you. I mean, this is the kind of situation that's being blown up in the news as anti-gay, and that's not at all what it is. So that's why I have a problem with it, you know.
Yeah, well,
go ahead, sorry.
You know, no, it's fine. It's totally possible to be against the belief in homosexuality and still embrace the person within itself. And that's what
right.
the essence of Christianity is and pure religion, is that you don't have to agree with one's particular lifestyle, but you can still embrace people as a whole, because after all, that's what Christ did himself.
Well, right, and that's the thing. You know, people talk about, well, what would Jesus do? Well, remember, you know, when he spoke to the woman at the well, she mentioned her husband, and he said, well, no, this is not your husband. You've had three husbands. And what did he tell her? He didn't say, you know, get on with your bad self. No, he said, go and sin no more.
Right.
He was
That's
kind
exactly
to her in the moment, but he was still hard on her because he expected her to do right. And that's what people don't get. You know, when we come into a situation like this where we say, you know, I have a problem with this particular action, well, it doesn't mean that I can't still love the person and I can't still care about them because they have human worth. but they expect me to then coddle them. No, that's not how this works. You know, if I say go and sin no more, or, you know, obviously that's my place to say that, but if I say, hey, look, I have a problem with this particular lifestyle, it doesn't mean we can't be friends. It just means you have to understand that this is where I draw the line. I'm not saying anything that should be offensive.
Right, and again, much respect to those who are abiding by the oracles of Christian faith and the guidelines and morality and biblical principles and values, and who are not going to let an alternative viewpoint sway how they run their business or their lives. And I really think that's commendable.
Yeah, and that's, man, and they're really coming out of the woodwork, too. The number of people who are willing to go to the mat for this. You know, we grew up in Sunday school talking about people who were willing to die for their faith. And it was always either prefaced or immediately followed by, aren't you glad we live in America where this stuff doesn't happen? You know, where you're not persecuted for being a believer. You're allowed to worship as you please. You're allowed to express your religion in any way. You know, and now we've got kids who are being told during free reading time at school they can't open a Bible. And, you know, being ridiculed for praying in the lunchroom. This is not, you know, when we were growing up, this is the kind of stuff that wasn't supposed to happen in America. And we're really seeing it kind of come into its own little, it's becoming a thing now to have this go on. So it's hard to watch because it's really happened in our lifetime. I mean, I'm a little bit older than you and the millennials, but you know, I'm young enough to have seen this happen just in my own lifetime. So it's definitely a sobering thought, I guess, is the word I was looking for. But, well, is there anything else you'd like to put out about your book? We're going to take a quick break in a minute, and then I'm going to come back, and I've got a whole bunch more stuff to go through. But I wanted to thank you for coming on and for humoring me and talking about other stuff as well as the book.
It's no problem at all. Yeah, the book, actually, people can find out more information about the book by going to www.balcony7, that's the number 7.com. They can also pre-order the book today, actually, via Amazon,
awesome.
Barnes & Noble's, or Books A Million.
Okay, and the name of the book is Preservation and Purpose. And April what?
April 28th is the launch date.
April 28th. Okay, great. That's I will definitely be watching, and we'll try to give you a shout out when it gets closer as well on the show. Well, thank you again for coming on with me, and we'd love to have you anytime once the book comes out. If you want to come on and talk about it again, or if there's any issue that pops up that you're interested in talking about, you are welcome on the show anytime.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I do appreciate it.
All right. We have a great night.
All right. Likewise.
Bye. All right, Hannah, if you want to go ahead and take a quick break, and then we will come back and got a few more things to talk about. All right.
The alternative source of news, talk, and music for today's unconventional conservatives. This is AltCon Radio. We'll be right back.
Okay, and welcome back to Stovetop Politics. Hey, that's what we're doing. Today has been an interesting day. I called my mom today, and every other sentence I was stumbling over words. So I'm kind of surprised I haven't been a complete wreck on the show tonight. If anything happens, that's why. But I want to talk a little bit more about the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in Indiana. A couple of things that really struck me about that. One being that we really shouldn't need the law at all. I mean, constitutionally, there really isn't, I mean, you don't have a right to compel someone else to do business with you. But one of the real problem with this, and I was talking before about who was angry about it. Ashton Kutcher has been tweeting his disapproval, so has Hillary Clinton. Charles Barkley wants the NBA to keep all championship games out of Indiana until they repeal the law. And George Takei is keeping it simple. He's calling for an across-the-board ban of all things Hoosier. So there's that. But as I said before, what most of the people who oppose this law have in common is a fundamental misunderstanding of what it does. It technically does not give businesses the right to refuse service to someone based on sexual orientation. Although, and I mentioned this before, constitutionally speaking, it probably should. But it, what it does is reaffirms a business owner's right to abstain from participation in a business transaction that is at odds with his religious convictions. So here's the thing. The reason we need this law in the first place is activist judges who have been legislating from the bench because the social progress they want hasn't happened yet. So they allow catering to the protected class of the day to supersede a strict application of constitutional liberties. And so they make it necessary for laws like the Religious Freedom Restoration Act to be passed in an attempt to get some small measure of those liberties back. We're not talking about, they're giving us liberties that we didn't have. No, they're giving back liberties that never should have been taken away. But here's the thing. In regards to discrimination based on sexual preference, business owners should have the right to refuse service to anyone for any reason. This is not news. I've talked about this before. For me, it all comes down to property rights. Because if you're a business owner, we assume that you own your goods or services prior to the beginning of any business transaction. So if we allow the government to tell you who you can and must do business with, then basically we've ceded partial control of every business owner's property to the government, and we've made the government a third party to every business transaction. Doesn't sound like fun, does it? So... We were talking about this before. While I dislike making the comparison between, because the two issues are so very different, and we were talking about this before, many have compared the gay rights agenda to the civil rights movement. And some say that laws like the Religious Freedom Restoration Act should be deemed unconstitutional based on the Civil Rights Act of 1965. The problem is what they want is a society that has progressed beyond bigotry, and a law will never achieve that. I quoted Plato before. I'm going to do it again. He says that knowledge acquired under compulsion obtains no hold on the mind. And what that means essentially is that legislating the end of bigotry does not put an end to bigotry in the hearts of the people. Instead, it sends bigotry into hiding to fester and grow unchecked. The Civil Rights Act of 1965, while it advocated moral actions that were great, you know, don't discriminate against people based on their skin color. That's fantastic. That's a good thing for people to do. It's a moral action for an individual. However, it's not the state's place to make them do it. And so the Civil Rights Act of 1965 obviously did not mark the end of racism. Instead, it marked the day that America accepted government interference and called it societal progress. So, you know, we talk about that, and you know, that sounds like, you know, I had someone yell at me and tell me that I didn't want him to eat at the lunch counter. That's not what I mean at all. You know, he asked it how it was possible to believe that discrimination should be legal but also believe that it's wrong. But it is, because in each case, a different party is responsible for carrying out the action. The legality or constitutionality of discrimination is a question for the state. And a strict reading of the Constitution suggests that property rights of an individual supersede the right of another to wield the power of government against him and demand to be served. The morally acceptable thing to do, however, is to not discriminate, but to choose the moral action is the responsibility of the business owner. So the simple nutshell concept here is that the liberty to discriminate against anyone for any reason is and should be constitutional. But for an individual to discriminate against other people for, you know, skin color, sexual preference, what have you, is morally wrong. The Religious Freedom Restoration Act restores some of the liberties addressed by the former, but does not condone the moral repugnance of the latter. And most of the people who are opposing this legislation, they don't make that distinction. And it's a lot of technobabble, you know, for political junkies. And so a lot of people don't pay attention to it. They just hear, oh, discrimination, okay, it's bad. Well, we can talk about all the reasons that discrimination isn't bad. I mean, I've talked about that before, too. Discrimination, I mean, I used to be in the military. And that was one of the most, if not the most, discriminatory places to work in the world. When you get into the U.S. military, they can either prevent you from getting in or kick you out based on your being too tall, too short, too fat, too skinny, too stupid, too sick. I mean, there are so many things that the Army discriminates against just as you, you know, to get you going to walk through the door. And the reason that that's okay and even preferable is that it makes sure that you have the strongest fighting force available. If they didn't make these distinctions, if they didn't say, well, okay, but if you're over 6 feet tall or if you're over 6 foot five, we can't accommodate you in certain transport vehicles. Well, it's no longer safe. Well, and if you're not above a certain height and you can't reach or can't carry certain equipment or you can't run fast because you're carrying an extra 100 pounds, or you can't, you know, all of these things are detrimental to the end goal, which is a competent fighting force. And so, you know, you have to be discriminatory. But it's become this buzzword that discrimination is bad. Discrimination is bad. You can't even finish the sentence because all discrimination is bad and there is no qualifier that could change that. And so it's a difficult minefield to navigate. So, Hammy, do you want to weigh in on this, or should I jump into the next thing on this whole religious freedom thing?
Well, I think, you know, I did it a little bit on the show on Friday night as well, and I think one of the points, and I actually targeted a little bit more of my angst, as it were, towards some of those on our own side, where there were calls for, oh, another law. This is more, almost like it was more government intrusion. And I said, you know, if anything, especially from a libertarian standpoint, it's, you know, while it would be really wonderful if we didn't need more laws, sometimes clarification is a good thing. And if you look at something that restricts judicial activism, that limits government interference,
right,
in how mm-hmm. private business owners operate, this is a good law. This is the kind of laws that we want passed. I think,
well,
maybe I swayed a few people, but not as many as I'd like.
I made the comparison, actually, with when I was talking to my husband about it, with right to work. Technically, we shouldn't need a law that says you can't be compelled to join a union, et cetera, et cetera.
Good call.
But if you, you know, when you look at all the bad law that's been passed, beginning with the Taft-Hartley Act, and right to work is a piece of legislation that takes a stab at undoing past awful legislation. And so that's why I phrased it the way I did when I was talking to Demetrius. This is not a law that is adding to the law books. This is a law that is undoing years of judicial activism. You know, property rights up to this point have been sacrosanct, and judges are messing with it. You know, free exercise of religion has been untouchable, and judges are messing with it. And this is kind of it's almost a retroactive bulwark against this, you know, against judicial activism and further infringement of the First Amendment. And but here's the other thing, and my husband brought this up. I didn't even think about it until later. But freedom of association, we don't think about a whole lot. We talk about freedom of religion. We talk about freedom of speech and a free press. Nobody really talks about freedom of association. But if you think about it, this affects that as well. Because if you talk about now you have a business owner. If the business owner is compelled to do business when he doesn't want to, that's a violation of his right to free association. But it doesn't just affect the business owner. It affects everybody. Now, imagine this. You are a photographer, but you don't own the business. If the business owner can be compelled to take pictures at a same-sex marriage, can the business owner not force you to do that wedding if you're the employee? You say, oh, well, you're the employee. You don't have to work there. Well, no, but if the business owner can be compelled to take the contract and then he can force you to do it, if you go and strike out on your own and open your own studio, guess what? Now you're subject to the government mandate and you can still be compelled to do it. Well, what if you go work for another studio? Guess what? That employer can be compelled to do it too and he can make you do it. Well, so you decide to leave photography. You go and fold napkins for a living. Guess what? They can make you fold napkins at a same-sex marriage because now it doesn't matter whether you're the business owner or the employee. You can be compelled to take part in something that violates your religious principles, and free association for everyone is completely eradicated by one activist judge. That's all it takes.
Right.
Interesting, isn't it?
But that's the country we've come to expect now. That regardless of the will of the people, regardless of how careful legislatures are to, you know, be within the law and, you know, everything else, you know, all the legalese that goes on over there, we've come to expect that someone, 0.011 whatever percent of the population, is going to be upset. They're going to sue, and the entire will of the people is going to be overturned. It's litigious lawmaking now. That's how we operate, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
I don't think the founders ever imagined that. I don't think that's how they envisioned it at all.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. So, okay, let's do something kind of a little bit more fun. We got some interesting news this week, and what?
I said, "Listen to me rant."
That's not what I meant. We got some interesting news this past week, and there are several senators that have announced that they will not be running again. One of them was Barb Mikulski from Maryland. But most recently, and Judicial Watch seems to think that it's because he's been threatened by people, basically with just one scandal after another. But Harry Reid is going to retire. And we have a whole theme song to go along with that. Don't we, Hammy?
We do. Maybe.
Maybe.
If
what do you put
my act together?
Do I have to sing it? What? So I don't know if you guys heard this, but somebody said that he got threatened by the mob because that's one of the rumors going around that he didn't actually have an accident in his weight room. He was counseled by several mob bosses who were not happy with legislation he was supposed to have passed and did not. So there's that. But Judas Awadh, which is, you know, a far more reputable source, was saying that basically they were front-loaded with scandals and they could have taken him out. And if they had gone forward with everything, he could have spent retirement in prison. So, which, to be honest, doesn't surprise me all that much. But, so there's that. Anyway... we were going to talk a little bit about Bo Bergdahl, and I might save that because this is going to be his court martial's coming up, and so he's going to be in the news some more. And I'm just wondering, I'm not sure that he's going to be able to get a fair trial. And I'm not saying this because I think that he's going to be – I'm not saying that they're necessarily going to take it easy on him. But I'm just wondering, President Obama kind of stepped in it by talking about his exemplary service and, well, he stepped in it by trading 5 terrorists for a deserter. So let's call it what it is. But I don't know if I've talked about this before. There's something that goes on in the military. It's called unlawful command influence. And it's when somebody with a large amount of either rank or power or both makes a statement that makes that interferes with the judicial process. And by going out of his way to bring this guy home when he probably knew he was at least a deserter, and then allowing Susan Rice to make comments about his exemplary service and how he had served honorably and et cetera. I think that the president has made it difficult for justice to actually be served in this case. Now, I have friends who are basically calling for his head, and realistically, I don't know if that's something that's even on the table. But it'll be interesting to see how the situation plays out. And actually, I may bring this up with I'm still waiting for a call back. There is a former Navy SEAL who has announced a run for Missouri governor. Eric Greitens is his name. He's a Rhodes Scholar, former Navy SEAL, and has written a few books. And he's looking at running for governor in Missouri. And I just spoke with his publicist earlier today, and we're looking into having him come on the show next week. If he's not going to be available next week, then we may take a break for Easter Monday. But I do know that the week after Easter, we are going to come back with Holly Fisher. She's going to co-host with me or just whatever's going on. Not really necessarily too much about her personal situation, because I think that's kind of been overdone, but we're just going to have her come on I've talked with her a few times, and our senses of humor kind of line up. So it should be an interesting show. That'll be April 13th. But hopefully on the 6th, we'll have Eric Greitens on, and we'll do that. I have a few questions for him because there's been some interesting interesting rumors about him, and I'd kind of like to see what he thinks about the state of Missouri before I kind of open my mouth on what I know. So we'll get to that next week, hopefully. What else was we going to talk about? Oh, yeah, we mentioned Iran earlier, and apparently there's a Washington Post poll that says the overwhelming majority of Americans support a deal in Iran. And the fact that Washington Post did the poll suggests that we could probably invert the numbers and that would be a little more accurate. So I have a theory of what we should do regarding Iran, and I'm going to let the song speak for me. So go for it, Naomi.
La, 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 weaponry. It's the way to get it done. Weaponry. It's effective and it's fun. If you want to make them fall on bended knee at your command, bow their heads and swear that you're the leader of the land. State your wishes in a language they all understand. With weaponry, that's the plan. If power's on your shopping list, then use the elbow and the fist. Pummel 'em until they get the gist. Just make an example of, representative sample of, and most of them will not be missed. You can beat them up by any means or blow them all to smithereens. A favorite of this sentient machine. Never mind the fatalities, when there's municipalities to crush a set of with the threat of weaponry. We'll inspire Dr. D, weaponry. To have confidence in me, if I'm gonna be a conqueror and win my father's love, I'll take it to the people with the eagle, not the dove. If there's one thing that obedience is symptomatic of, it's W-E-A-P-O-N-R-Y, weaponry. From above.
So what do you think, Naomi? I told you,
that's
Reagan foreign policy in a cartoon.
Yep.
If there's one thing that obedience is symptomatic of, it's weaponry. That's it right there. What have we said before? Peace through strength. And, you know, you and I have talked about Reagan, and let's bring Reagan back. I mean, let's bring his ideas back. And I was talking about, I mentioned something, I can't remember what was it, a couple of days ago. I was talking to a friend about it. I said, wait, bring Reagan back. Screw that. Let's get Coolidge if we're going for, you know, why not go all the way? Speaking of Coolidge, you know who Chuck C. Johnson is?
Yeah.
The guy who tried to sink Holly Fisher?
Yes.
Do you see what he's doing now? He's going after Colonel Allen West.
Okay.
Accusing him of multiple affairs and just, yeah. I'm like, dude isn't even running for president. As far as I know, he's not running for any public office. What is your point? You know? So he's at the point where he's destroying people because he thinks that's what news is.
Right.
It's not news unless you're taking somebody down. Well, no. No, but if you want to take people down, at least do take people down who need to be taken down. I mean, Hillary Clinton, Elizabeth Warren. I mean, go get dirt on Harry Reid. Please. You know, if you're this good at finding stuff that no one else has, then why don't you find it on the people that need to go?
Well, I mean, everybody
Instead,
has said for a while now, why does he spend all his time attacking conservatives? It's driving me nuts. And you know what his claim is on that? Well, if I don't hold our side accountable, how can I possibly hold the other side accountable? Oh, I'm sorry, you could just hold the other side accountable. Trust me, they'll hold us accountable.
Yeah, and here's the thing. It's one thing to say, yeah, if I don't hold our side accountable, I can't hold the other side accountable. But you have to then hold the other side accountable, too. He's not doing that. He's not going after the other side at all. even if we were, like, on equal footing and he was saying, okay, well, I'm going to attack, you know, this week we're going to go after 3 Democrats and 3 Republicans. Okay. And instead it's just, I'm going to go after Republican after Republican, and he doesn't hit back, you know, that there are plenty of Democrats doing dumb stuff, and he's not going after them ever. I don't think I've ever seen him attack a Democrat. So, I mean, he tried to eviscerate Dana, too, which, you know, she doesn't bleed easy. So, that was kind of fun. But, yeah. Man, crazy messed up world that we live in right now, isn't it?
Yep.
So, yeah, what I was trying to, I was on, priest carries out mass exorcism on children at camp. I don't even want to read the rest of that. Like, what? I don't even, people are stupid. That's really all I have to say about that. So the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, I have a piece coming on that on Dana's page probably tomorrow, and it kind of goes over the stuff that I said here. Some sad news as we leave. I don't know if you heard, we had the Missouri GOP suffered another loss. Tom Schweik, the state auditor and gubernatorial candidate, who committed suicide about a month ago, his media director was found dead, suspected suicide last night. And he had talked to his family on Friday, and then on Sunday, when they hadn't heard anything else from him, his mom called the police, and they found him and a revolver and a spent cartridge and a note, and that was it. They haven't released the contents of the note, the location of the bullet wound, any of that stuff. But they did say that they did not see any signs of foul play, forced entry, anything like that. So they are investigating it as a suicide. And with the connection between him and Tom Schweik, the Missouri GOP is hurting. It's a mess right now. They don't have any idea what's going on. So that's one of the reasons that I am so interested to talk to Eric Greitens, because he is poised to kind of swoop in and be a little something different. So I think it'll be interesting to see what he has to say just regarding the situation in Missouri with Ferguson, with turmoil within the GOP, and just all of that stuff. So, Hammy, you want to give me the lineup for the rest of the week?
Yeah, we've got we've only got the one other show this week, because we've got a hiatus on for about a month on getting hammered while we change some technical stuff over here. But that's it. Just Wednesday night back here.
Okay, Wednesday night red wine. Is it 10 Eastern or is it 9?
It's 9 Eastern. Sorry, I'm using it for the last year.
9
seconds.
Eastern. Okay, well, that's good. All right. Have a great night, everybody. We'll see you next week.